It's time. Time to get inspired and empowered. To realize it's never too late. To create your next amazing story. Get ready to break through, transform, and start living the life of your dreams. So, are you ready? Truly ready to begin your journey to create your next amazing story in life and love? Great. Let's jump in with your host, Life and Love Transformational Coach, Suzanne Oshima.
Welcome, everybody, to the It's Never Too Late show. I'm Suzanne Oshima, and I'm a Life and Love Transformational Coach at Your Next Amazing Story. I am super excited because today we have another amazing guest, Dwayna Welch, and she's the author of Love Factually, 10 Proven Steps from I Wish to I Do. And I'm so excited to have her here today because today we're talking about it's never too late to win at love. But before we jump into it, Dwayna, I would love for you to tell the ladies a little bit about you and, you know, what made you write this book?
Well, as you know, I've actually written several books. That's my first one. And then I've got another one that's Love Factually for Single Parents and Those Dating Them, and a whole bunch of shorter single topic books. And the reason I got into this is basically that I sucked at dating. I was tired of being bad at this thing that other people seem to figure out. And it turns out that it only looks like other people figure it out because we focus on the success stories. We don't notice all our friends around us who are also struggling. So I turned to science rather than opinion. Opinion was getting me nowhere. I was getting a PhD in the social sciences, specifically in psychology. And I thought, you know, why am I stumbling around at this? There's probably science on it. And I originally looked for books on the topic and there weren't any. And so I looked at the science initially for purely selfish reasons. And then I became a blogger and a coach and an author so that everyone could benefit from that. And so that's where I am today, very happily married for the last 11 and a half years to my sweetie, Vic. And we have an amazing life. And I would wish the kind of life we have, that kind of happiness for everyone.
Right. No, I know. And you're so giving and you have a wealth of information. But I know that in your life, it hasn't always been that way. I mean, I know you're happily married today, but there was a time in your life when it wasn't so happily ever after. So can you share with the ladies what happened in your life and how you felt like maybe it was too late for you?
Yeah, Suzanne, as you know, having interviewed me several times now over the years and since I first got started, there are huge parts of my story that I was not comfortable telling until very, very recently. That's partly because any one of us, the stories that we have about our relationships, they are also stories about our ex-partner or other people in our lives, such as our children. So I wasn't sure how comfortable I felt telling stories that weren't entirely my own. But the truth is that I learned all of this stuff, or a lot, not all of it, but a lot of it about science and dating before I met my child's father. And that's how I met him. And I was very, very madly in love with him. Absolutely adored that man. He was the kind of guy who he would notice if I even give a passing glance to a dress or a guitar or something that I liked. And then that would show up at the very next occasion for a gift or just a surprise. Just super, super sweet, really smart, getting his PhD in chemistry, cute. I loved his family, really great sense of humor. And unfortunately, I ignored one of my own deal breakers. As readers of my books will know, I really advocate making a list and deciding what's a must have for you and what's a would like to have, a want. And I had not been raised around any sort of addiction or abuse. And so I did not have that on my list, that somebody needed to embrace lifelong sobriety or sobriety as a way of life. And he had a very, very long history of drug and alcohol addiction, really most of his life. And it wasn't his fault, by the way. A doctor had prescribed barbiturates when he was a little boy and then took him off cold turkey at 15. And of course, you know, by then his brain had really developed. So I don't have any bitterness about what happened to him as far as the ramifications for me. But the fact that I didn't look at that clearly means that while helping others find the love of their lives, I committed to someone where it was completely unworkable. And so I didn't realize how unworkable it was until after our only child was born. And then one night he fell on top of the baby because he was in a stupor. And then one night he was physically unresponsive. I thought he was dying. And one day he went and picked the baby up and drove all over Los Angeles, which is where I was a professor at the time. I was a professor at Cal State Fullerton. And as you know, in Southern Cal, you live maybe an hour drive away from where you actually work. It might only be a few miles, but it takes forever to get there. So the daycare was near the house, and my ex got home early, and he drove our baby all over Los Angeles while so wasted that he could barely speak, and in the time that it took me to get home. And that was a real wake-up call for me. I realized that I was going to have to find a way to protect my child. So initially, I found a sitter who would stay after daycare hours until I could be physically present. The sitter would stay in the house. And so my baby was not alone with the dad. Even the dad was a sweet person, but you just can't have that. You can't have someone who's driving your baby around under the influence. You can't have someone who's turning the gas stove on and forgetting to turn it off, and it's not lit. You can't, these things were happening. And so that worked for a while. And then my sweet little darling, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when he was only 25 months old. He was born with it, but you don't show diagnosable symptoms until the disease process has gone really quite far. So at that point, he needed to take insulin, and it's very hard to keep a child safe. You can give them too much and they can die. So I just felt like my child's life was in extreme danger being in this circumstance, and I needed to still work, but I couldn't go to work anymore. So I realized that no job was worth this, not even one I had trained for my entire life. I mean, at that point, I'd gotten a bachelor's, a master's, a certification, and a doctorate in my field. And I had my own laboratory at Cal State Fullerton, which was pretty hot shit back then. So I was really at the top of my game, and I had been told I was getting tenure. And I walked.
Wow.
And the way I walked, I actually got an attorney to help me figure out what the laws were in California, because I wasn't willing for my child to be alone with his father ever. And that's not what the law says. So sneaky is best. I was very sneaky. I consulted with an attorney in Texas who told me, look, the laws in California say that you can't take your child out of California without the father's permission. And he's not going to give you permission. So what you need to do is tell him that you are you're taking a vacation to see your family. And then he's, of course, going to think, yay, drug holiday. And he's going to crawl down inside a bottle or whatever. And you're just going to keep extending that vacation until 6 months. And the first day of the 6 month, serve him with papers. And so I left my career, not just that job, the whole career, knowing I would never get another tenure track job. That's not how it works. I left my pets, which, you know me, that's not a small thing for me. I left my house. It was the first house I'd ever bought. It was absolutely adorable in a neighborhood I really wanted to live in. I left my friends. I'm a Unitarian. I left my church and my congregation, my community there. I left my colleagues who I've been working with 6 years and really quite liked. I left everything, and I went back to Texas to one room of my mother and stepdad's house, and with my baby and a suitcase and a case of pneumonia. I was so distressed. I had pneumonia by the time I got there. And I started all over, feeling like the biggest failure in the world. I was so depressed. I can't even tell you.
Oh my goodness, Duana. You know, all I picture is you literally left every single part of your life behind, and you literally had to start over. And I know that wasn't easy. And so what would you say was that, what I like to call it, that moment that you were just like, that's it. And you shifted and you said, I got to do this and I got to move on, even though you literally lost everything.
My moment, I remember I was making chocolate chip cookies with my baby in the kitchen, and he was putting cookie dough into his mouth, and he was just 25 months old, and he was so darling. And that week, he had had symptoms that I did not know were symptoms of type 1 diabetes. And I had called the nurse that afternoon. It was a Friday afternoon, and I'd left a message that said, my child's doing the following three really weird things, and it's probably nothing. I'm one of these moms who waited till her 30s to have kids, and tell me I'm crazy. Just call me back. Tell me I'm nuts, and I'll just go on with my weekend. And I got a call back, and this nurse said, who in the family has type 1 diabetes? And it just hit me that my mother-in-law did. My husband's mother had type 1 diabetes. She had been diagnosed right about the same age that my child was then. And I just burst into tears because I knew what I was seeing now. And she said, the lab closes in 5 minutes, but we're going to hold it open until you get there. And you need to go home after we draw blood. You need to go home with that baby, and you need to pack for several days because in all odds, we're going to find this diagnosis and you're going to be in the hospital. So my ex was, of course, not then my ex. He was in the room with me, and he came up behind me, and he put his arms around me, and he said, look, I'm done. This makes it really clear. I need to clean up my act. And I looked at him, and I said, I don't know if you just hit bottom, but I just did. And that was it. What he didn't know I was saying was, oh, dude, I had to choose, and I choose my baby. There was no question. Before that, I thought I could still do both. I thought that I could get him checked into a rehab and that, you know, we could stay in the house and I could find a way to work and my mom could come to visit more often. And I had all these plans for it was going to be hard, but I could work it out. And that's the moment when I was like, this is over. I've got to make a choice. That's really clear to me now. And I don't choose you. I choose him. Yeah. And that changed. I had a phone call with my ex last week, during which he was so intoxicated that he could barely speak and he was suicidal. And I wouldn't wish his fate on anyone. He is suffering. He is suffering grievously. And, you know, I still love him. That may seem strange to your listeners who've never been through something like this, but you pick these people because you love them. The reason to leave someone isn't always because you don't love them anymore. It's because it's totally not workable and you can't save them. But you can still save you and you can still save your child. There was no saving him. Knowing his history, there was no saving him. He couldn't save him. I certainly couldn't if he couldn't.
Yeah. So, Duana, in your relationship with him, was he doing the drugs and alcohol abuse very early on in the relationship, or did you not start to notice it till later?
It was both and. On the first date, he told me he had a long history with drug and alcohol abuse, especially alcohol abuse, but that he had been sober for 4 years. And I knew statistically that if somebody's been sober continually for 4 years, their odds of resuming use are really low. Mm-hmm. So that's a risk I was willing to take. But 6 weeks into our relationship, he got a 6-foot-tall can of nitrous oxide at a welding supply, and he spent 72 hours using the whole tank. It's amazing he lived.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I've never told this story. Well, it's hardcore addiction here, you know, substance switching, using new and different things because the things that you've sobered up from, you want to tell yourself you're sober, so you find something different. Anybody who's been to Al-Anon will recognize these sorts of behaviors as being fairly routine, maybe not nitrous, but something else. So he told me, and I broke up with him. And a couple weeks later, you know, he kept courting me in very, very sweet ways. And I just thought, you know, he seems so sincere. He's not going to do it again. The best predictor of what someone's going to do in the future is what they've already done in the past, especially if they've done it recently and frequently. And he met both measures, and I didn't. Again, science was there to help me, but did I let it? I didn't let it. I mean, that was my failing right there.
Right. Was there a part of you, Duana, also that felt like you could save him or fix him from this addiction?
No, I did get quite clearly that that was not on the table. Look, married people save each other all the time. They really do, from lots and lots of things. Vic, my husband now, I like to say my last husband.
And he is your last husband.
I adore him. He has saved me from loneliness. He saved me from financial instability. I had quite a bit of money coming in, but it wasn't really clear when or how much it was going to be because I was on commission after I left my tenure track gig. He saved me from having to parent all on my own with no feeling of emotional backup or physical backup. Not that he did the parenting. Our child's now almost out of the house, going to college in the fall, but it's not like Vic did the parenting, but I didn't feel alone with my parenting. And that was a huge thing. If I needed someone to get up in the middle of the night to check my child's blood sugar, Vic would do it for me. You know, I just, I he saved me from a lot of things, and he helped me to feel more secure and more fully alive and happy and whole. But I was open and willing and even eager to be saved in those ways. And I saved him in some ways too. The thing is that you can't save the unwilling.
Right.
You can't change the unwilling. My ex still today, if you ask him, do you have an addiction or a problem, he'll say no.
Yeah, I just and I want to emphasize this because I've been around a lot of addiction. I've had a lot of a lot of friends that were addicted to drugs or alcohol in my past, and I want to make that very clear to women because I don't think a lot of people get that is that if they're not willing to admit that they have a problem, it's really hard to help them shift into a sober lifestyle, right?
Yeah, you can help people who want to be helped. Even then, it's a real uphill slog. They need to want it for themselves, not only because your relationship counts on it.
Right.
People can change briefly to get the relationship back, but changing long term requires that they really acknowledge that they have a problem that for many other reasons they want fixed and that they invite your assistance. I wasn't in that circumstance. And I did see in a very clear-eyed way. Once our child was born and diagnosed with T1D, I saw that I wasn't in that circumstance, that I didn't have, and I really regretted it. By this time, I was teaching master's level courses where I worked in relationship science into my course offerings. I knew what happens to children when their parents get divorced. I knew what happens to women when they divorce their partner. I knew what was about to happen in my career. It was horrifying partly because I was not ignorant about what came next. And it was still harder than I ever thought it would be. Sometimes harder, even though I thought I knew. It was awful.
So
I used to.
how did you when you were in Texas, like because I'm sure that was hard to move back in with your mother, right? But how were you able to really pick yourself back up at that point?
Well, I have to thank my mother and my stepfather. I mean, my stepfather who came into my life when I was about 30. So it's not like like I grew up with them or we were close or anything. He simply said, "Bring that baby here." He never had.
Oh.
I mean, it's funny because sometimes women will say to me, "Men are scum." No, that's not true. Some men are scummy. Some women are pretty bad. But there are a lot of decent people out there. My mother had very fortunately remarried one of them, and he welcomed us with open arms, as did my mother. She changed her whole life to accommodate us, from, which bedroom they were using to how both of them organized their day. There I was arriving in town with pneumonia, and my mom said, "You go to bed, honey. I'll take care of everything." And she just let me be depressed and sick and get over it. She learned how to take care of a child with a very intense, when they only weigh 23 pounds, you can give too much insulin really easily and kill somebody's kid. And she learned everything that could be done, and she really stepped up, and I will never forget that she and my stepdad were there for me in such a way. It was a wonderful thing. That said, how I put my life back together was mainly by telling myself that what are the odds that I'll still be this unhappy in 5 years? Because if I had done what I know scientifically the brain does, what the brain does is whatever mood we're in today, it projects that mood onto our past and our future. And this is why people who are depressed and just starting to come out of depression have five times the odds of suicide as other people, is because they're depressed when they're terribly depressed, which I was. Mm-hmm. They're so inert that a lot of times they can't even make a plan to kill themselves. But then they start to come out of the depression just a tiny bit. And what their brain tells them is, your life has always been bleak and it always will be. So what's the point? And that's when they make the plan and they do it. Because I was a psychologist with many, many years of teaching this kind of stuff, I had an advantage in knowing that. I knew that my state-dependent memory was not to be trusted, and I knew that the odds that if I just put one foot in front of the other and just kept swimming for as many as 5 years, that my life was going to be completely transformed. And so I completely transformed my life one step at a time with the support of my family.
Awesome. Well, my God, Duana, I've known you for a long time and I knew you were a strong woman, but every time I interview you, I'm like, oh my God, she's stronger than I actually thought she was. You're like this powerhouse Wonder Woman. So what I want to ask you, because I know a lot of women listening to this podcast or watching the video show, are relating to you right now. They're going, oh my God, I'm in a relationship, or I'm dating a man that has addiction issues, and or they could be married to one. So if a woman is in that state, how can she get out? Like, and what is your best advice that you can give her to help her?
The first thing is, if you're going to make a mistake, make sure it's a new one, not the ones you've already made. I really committed to not beating myself up, because that does nothing except keep you stuck. Scientifically, if you're feeling shame, which the feeling of shame is the feeling there's something wrong, there's something flawed about me. Well, if there's something flawed about you at a core level and you feel you can't fix it, you're just going to wallow around in your shame and you're not going to make progress. And I'm all about making progress. That's really where a lot of my fortitude comes from, is the feeling that we can change and that I want to change. So if you don't want to make the same mistakes again, commit to making new ones. You'll still make mistakes and that's okay, but feel appropriate guilt rather than shame. Guilt says, what I did didn't work. I'm going to do it differently going forward. And of course, you're still going to make mistakes, but they're going to be new ones and that's okay. Always aim to have your next mistake be a new mistake. The second thing I would say that's very closely related to that is, don't reinvent the wheel. People, there's science. There are books like mine. I'm no longer the only person out there who's writing science-based books about all kinds of relationships. John Gottman now has a wonderful new book called 8 Dates that can help people transform an already basically healthy relationship. If there's, you know, a serious issue like abuse of people or substances, it's probably not going to be great. But for, you know, garden variety, you want your relationship to be better, I recommend that book. There are many, many books at this point. Tim Cole and Emily Duddleston have one called about intimate betrayal. I can't remember the title of it now, but it's about betrayal. And, you know, if you needed to get past a betrayal, that would be a good book. You no longer have to go back through the stacks at the library or on your computer and read science articles yourself. There are some of us who are reading science, so you don't have to. And I want you to read our stuff. Let science help you. So that would be kind of my number one and number two guide. I now have books about how to avoid abusers, how to detect whether someone would abuse you if they could, before they get a chance to do it. So for any aspect of relating, usually you can find a resource out there that's reliable that can help you. And I really encourage you to do so.
Right. And do you have one last tip?
Yeah, I do. But the question is, can I remember it?
I can remember it. It's about forgiving.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad I told you that ahead of time. Yes. So one of the things people struggle with when they make a poor relationship choice, and almost all of us have made choices that didn't work out for various reasons, the temptation is not just to blame that other person. Even worse, the temptation is to blame and dislike ourselves and distrust ourselves. And so I want to encourage you to learn what forgiveness is. And I actually have one of my books, my second book, Love Factually for Single Parents, has a chapter on how to do this from a science perspective. The short and quick version of this is you don't have to say, no big deal, what you did wasn't a problem, you can come back and do it again. That's not what forgiveness is. What forgiveness is seeing the past through your eyes, if it's you you're forgiving, or through the other party's eyes, if it's them you're forgiving. See it through their eyes, not so you can excuse it or condone it or sweep it under the rug, but so that you can have empathy for their perspective at the time they did it. Because what you discover when you go through that exercise is, oh, they did this thing, which affected me terribly. They did this thing for their own reasons. It was never about me. I don't have any bitterness about my ex-husband at all, but he does about me. The most recent time we spoke, he indicated many times that he thinks I have a terrible character and that I lie all the time and that I can't be trusted. He has a lot of bitterness and anger. And that's what a lack of forgiveness is. It's the presence of bitterness and anger and sometimes even vengefulness. All forgiveness is letting that go, which happens when you empathize with the other person's perspective. Look, from my ex-husband's perspective, he was doing the very best he could at the time. It put me and my child and him in danger. But that doesn't mean he's a bad person. It means I had to protect us. I had to protect the two people that I could protect. But it doesn't mean that... when you see it that way, it's very easy to let go of the huge sack of stones you're carrying over your shoulder that's debilitating and keeping you from loving fully and freely and openly in the future. You will be so much happier if you drop that bag of stones, let the past be the past, and move forward with a light heart. Because, your future partner, I want you to have the most amazing love going forward. And you get that more easily if your amazing future love doesn't detect a huge chip on your shoulder or a bag of stones over your shoulder.
Yeah, I totally agree, Duana. It's so important to forgive because it will hold you back. It will hold you back from the right relationship with the right man. And you're right. Otherwise, you show up into the relationship with a chip on your shoulder. And also, I believe when you don't forgive is that you actually come into the relationship with a closed heart instead of an open heart, because there's so many fears going on for you that you haven't dealt with. Is he going to do the same thing, and trust issues? And so it's important to let all that go and let it be the past. So
it absolutely is. And when Vic and I met, we had both been through what I call the torment of the damned. I mean, I'm not going to tell his story, but his story is in its own way every bit as bad as mine. And yet when we met, there we were, open-hearted and willing to love again. And every single day that man shows me not only that he is such a light in my life and that I love him, but that I can absolutely trust him and count on him.
Oh, I love that. Well, Duana, thank you again for sharing your amazing story, because I know it gives so many women out there hope that are in these situations and to get help. So, Duana, how can the ladies find you?
Oh, it's so easy to do. Just go to lovefactually.co. That's lovefactually.co. And you can see free chapters and what all my books are and learn more about me and see my coaching link. And you can even write me a note if you want to. I answer all my emails for free.
Awesome. So everybody, go get that free chapter of Love Factually, because as you can see, Duana is amazing. So thanks everybody for joining us on the It's Never Too Late show. Our show is available both in video format and podcast format. If you would like to view the videos, you can go to yournextamazingstory.com. And if you'd like to get the podcast, you can download it from iTunes. And if you would like to get our free ebook, How to Create Your Next Amazing amazing love story in 3 simple steps, you can click right here on the video, or you can go to yournextamazingstory.com.
Love today's episode of the It's Never Too Late show? Then head on over to yournextamazingstory.com to continue the conversation and access to show notes and get more amazing content.